Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Today we are talking woody ornamentals, and we have two guests for you. Laura Gell, Associate Professor, UW Extension Horticulturist, and works out of the UW-Madison Horticulture Department, as a matter of fact. Brian Huddleston, he knows a lot about diseases. I don't know if he knows anything about human diseases, but he's pretty good on the plants. Hi, Brian.
Nice. Hi, good morning. How are you?
And by the way, Laura, welcome.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Brian's a plant disease diagnostician. That's the worst word for me to say.
Call me Dr. Death. That's my nickname.
Yeah, diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. So, tell you what, questions about woody ornamentals. And by the way, Laura, I mentioned a few. What all are we? Let's define that. What are woody ornamentals for you?
Well, Larry, you hit it on the nose with trees, shrubs, vines, and woody ground covers. But you also didn't mention evergreens. And evergreens are a wonderful backbone of the landscape.
They sure are. I have one. And I sometimes wish I had more. I've got a birch that's doing really good. We're living on the lake, you know, we've got
cool breezes.
You get cool breezes, and that birch is kind of right out there near the, probably within 20 feet of the shore. And if you go down in our lawn, if you go straight down about 4 feet, 4.5, you're going right to water. So it seems like it gets plenty of water and seems like it's happy there.
Unlike the typical location for most birch trees in urban landscaping, it's in the middle of a dry lawn with grass all the way around the base, right?
And bronze birch borer, not a tree.
I have no bronze birch borers, at least not that I've noticed. So I'm happy with that. I tell you what, Tom and Stoddard has been patiently waiting, called even before the program, and has a question for us. So let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about my wigea, I believe that is the way you pronounce the name of the plant, but it's a flowering shrub about 4 feet high. Anyway, I've had it for a number of years, and it's done well, and last winter I did dump some wood ashes around the base of that plant. Did I change the pH so that it's going backwards? I have branches that are dying, and what's left of it looks kind of a little on the yellow side on the leaves.
The shrub you're talking about is a weigelia, and I'm very familiar with that shrub. One question I have is, how much did you pile those wood ashes all over the base of the plant?
I had a 5-gallon bucket, and I dumped it around underneath the drip line.
Okay, one of the
up to the kind of up to the where the roots come out. I mean, where the plant comes out of the ground. So I didn't push the ashes right up into the where the roots are coming out of the ground, but kind of close to it.
Mm-hmm. One of the problems could be that there's too much material around the base of the plant, and water isn't getting down to the root system. It's kind of like, in effect, raising the grade of a tree. Putting too much mulch or too much soil on top of the root system can really diminish the amount of water and oxygen that gets to that root system. I would take that material and I would spread it out away from the base of the plant. You don't want any more than 2-3 inches absolute max of that material. I also would water your plants. They may be suffering some drought stress.
Here inside, I'm just absolutely sick of it.
You had a lot of rain and stuff.
It's dry down here.
Any disease kind of situation that might exist there?
If there's been a lot of rain, then I would be concerned possibly about root rot issues. There are certain fungi in the soil that can infect root systems, and they tend to do better when it's a little bit wetter. And so the sorts of symptoms that you're describing, branch dieback, yellowing of leaves, those can be symptoms of root disease of some kind. And so what you might want to do is, you know, check a little bit, do this very judiciously, but see if you can find any of the roots that are near the surface and see if you see any indications of browning that would indicate that they're not doing particularly well, and that could be an indication of a root rot. Unfortunately, in terms of managing of that, you really need to know exactly what's causing the problem, because I might be tempted in your situation to recommend a fungicide treatment of some kind, but in order to make a proper recommendation, you need to know exactly which organism is causing the problem. So that would involve a lab test of some kind to determine that.
Okay. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Tom. Appreciate it. Helen in Milwaukee. It's your turn. Hi, Helen.
Good morning.
Morning.
I saw white fringe trees in northwestern Connecticut this spring, and they were just magnificent. And I wondered if they would grow in Milwaukee. I live only 6 blocks from the lake.
They're in Connecticut. They ought to work in Milwaukee.
Oh, they're one of my very favorite plants.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
It's awesome.
So wonderful.
It's just like heaven. I mean, the white fringe tree is, the scientific name is Chionanthus virginicus, and yes, it can grow here just fine, even in Madison.
Oh, good.
The problem is trying to find them.
Yes, I went online and they were always all sold out.
Yeah, they're an excellent. They're actually an urban tolerant plant as well, and they have relatively few, if any, insect and disease problems. They're pretty tough plants, and they have separate sexes, so a plant can be either male or female. If you happen to have a male and female plant, the female produces fruit that looks like little olives, and they turn blue.
Oh.
They're not edible. I've tried them. They're really bad.
But they the flowers
are very
fragrant.
Very fragrant.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. I just went online and looked. Park Seed has some for sale, maybe, and there are probably others. I check with the Wisconsin folks and see what you can come up with. Maybe not this year anymore.
Well, they might still have some in containers. Probably.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know if Jung's handles those or who handles those in Wisconsin.
I'm not sure if they do or not.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Helen. Appreciate the call. How long do they live?
Oh, when I was in North Carolina for graduate school, I've seen some that were 30, 40 years old.
Oh, and how tall?
They only get, here in Wisconsin, they only get about 12, 15 feet max. And they're a multi-stemmed, whether it's a tree or shrub, depends on how you look at it. But it's moderate growth rate, yellow fall color, very nice plant.
Hmm. All right. Thanks again, Helen. Pat and Mazo. Manny, your turn. I always said Mazo. That's where my grandparents were from. Mazo. Mazo Manny. Hi, Pat.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I have two questions. I'm hoping you can answer a rose question for me. I bought a knockout rose grafted to a standard this year. And I've put off planting it because I wasn't sure. I bought it from a big box store, and I wasn't sure whether the grafted tree would be hardy. So I've just sunk it in the ground in its plastic pot. So I wondered if you could tell me about that.
Well, with knockout rose, if it's grafted onto a tree standard, so meaning it's a single stem coming out of a pot and the shrubs on top, that's going to need winter protection. I mean, you can plant it in the ground out of its pot, but come wintertime, you're going to need to dig a trench and you're going to need to lay it flat, the whole plant in the trench and cover it with mulch material. That graft union where the shrub is connected to the tree part is what you need to protect. Some people say they've not had a problem with overwintering it where they just left it out in the open. I know in my rose trials, knockout rose wasn't real cold hardy in the northern part of the state, or even here in Madison. I had a lot of dieback on the knockouts that weren't even grafted. They were just shrubs on their own root system. So I'd probably put it in a protected location. Of course, they need full sun, as all roses do. But I would probably, just to be on the safe side, I would probably dig a trench in late fall, dig the whole plant, lay it on its side, protecting the root system, cover it with some loose mulch material, straw, or something like that to insulate it.
What's the disadvantage of just keeping it in its pot and then taking it out and root pruning it every once in a while?
Well, it's eventually going to become pot bound. And yeah, you can root prune it, but eventually you'll need to put it into a bigger pot. And then in wintertime, you would have to bring it inside.
Okay.
All right.
I have another question, if you can answer it, if you have time. It's about a buddleia.
Buddleia,
And I just received it as a gift, and it says plant it in a protected spot, and Mazomania is probably zone 4, and I see it's a zone 5. It was also sold as a perennial, not a bush, so I'm wondering when you plant it, what does protected mean? On the east side of woody stuff, or and then also do you plant it as a perennial and really improve the soil, or do you just plant it as a bush and leave it in sandy kind of dry soil?
Okay, buddleia or butterfly bush, that plant is not reliably hardy here. It's called a dieback shrub, meaning the entire plant dies back to the ground every winter, but it's supposed to come back from the root system. So in a way, it's like a perennial, herbaceous perennial, but it actually is woody. So I call it a dieback shrub. Now, buddleia, lots of people have them in their yard. They're beautiful. I love them. They attract wonderful butterflies. In terms of hardiness, it's really borderline, and I recommend mulching the base of the plant in winter with some loose material, pine needles, straw, leaves, something to protect the crown of the plant. And even then, sometimes if we have a hard winter, it may not come back. Now, this past winter, we had a lot of snow cover, which snow is wonderful insulator of plants. And the ones I've noticed have came back okay this past year, but I've seen some that just didn't come back at all.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We're talking woody ornamentals, diseases, although Brian's probably feeling like the Maytag repair guy. You haven't had many questions. I bet you get a lot of those questions, though, at the diagnostic lab.
We get quite a few phone calls, and a lot of our materials that come into the clinic when we get samples are woody ornamentals, particularly problems on conifers. We get a lot of spruce samples with needle blights or tip blights that come in. So we deal with those sorts of trees and shrubs all the time, and also a lot of oak wilt testing, a lot of Dutch elm disease testing, those sorts of things.
What's been the biggest thing for you this year, and anything stand out for you?
Probably the needle diseases on conifers, particularly spruce, gets several different types of needle diseases and tip diebacks, and we have to kind of tease through the samples to see what's actually there. Lots of times it's multiple diseases at the same time, which is unfortunate.
You mentioned oak wilt. Have you had much of that this year?
We've had some samples that have come in. We do a lot of testing for that every year. Anytime someone sees an oak that's dying back, they think it's possibly oak wilt, and so they tend to send in samples. Much of the time it isn't, which is very fortunate.
Yes, good thing.
But we do have some other problems with the amount of drought that we've been seeing around the state over the past few years. A lot of the oak trees are stressed, and we've seen a lot of two-line chestnut borer activity, which will tend to cause a lot of dieback as well.
I've seen a lot of Dutch elm disease lately, too.
Did you see the elm right by Babcock Drive?
Yep.
We're over on the west end of campus, and there's a tree right close to where we both work that's dying from Dutch elm disease.
Oh, which one is it?
It's on the near the railroad tracks over there.
It's a big one, too.
That's a big one. I know that tree. Well,
at least I'm assuming it's Dutch elm disease. I can't think of much else that would cause those sort of symptoms on that tree.
That's too bad. Katie in Green Bay, it's your turn. We'll give you a chance. Hi.
Hi. My reason for calling is that I have winterberries, and I have one male and two females.
Mm-hmm.
I've had them for several years. I would venture almost, at least 4 years, and they have been declining. Now, they are facing east, and they do have behind them the white siding. So I suspect that the heat of the white siding might be part of my issue, possibly also drought. But as you know, we had a fair amount of snow, especially at the latter part of the year. And the problem is if you look at the leaves are smaller, and they are also look like they have burned edges. I checked with a couple of master gardeners, and they thought perhaps it was a lack of sulfur. And I did put some sulfur around the base of the trees, trying to water them a little bit more, and did some muriacid at the same time, just so that they would become a little bit more acidic. It's my impression that winterberry, for the most part, does not really have many pest diseases, and I don't know what I'm really dealing with.
Okay.
Do you have any issues or ideas?
Winterberry, it's one of our native hollies. It's a deciduous holly. And growing up in Michigan, we called it the Michigan holly, but outside of Michigan, nobody else knows it by that name. Winterberry actually needs some moisture. They're sensitive to drought. They're actually a kind of a wet feet loving plant. They also do like acidic soils. Is the whole plant yellowing, or is it just...
There is a slight amount of yellowing, but I was more concerned with the brown edges.
Yeah, it sounds like a root issue. Is this under an overhang of a house?
Not necessarily, no.
So,
there are some trees. There's an oak tree. I mean, it's near a driveway. There's an oak tree on the other side. There is a honey locust that would be north of it.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is, what kind of soil do you have?
Clay.
It's clay. Okay, it's not sandy. They'll do okay in clay soil, but one of the most important things is moisture. If they get too dry, you'll start to see edges of the leaves turning brown. Another thing, you could look for root rot, but usually winterberry, you don't see root rot in. They actually like wet feet. Is the plant fruiting at all?
Yes.
Okay.
But not, it almost seems, yeah, it is fruiting, but it's, again, like I said, in decline. So do you think if I am watering it better this year that it will... it will get better, or do you think that I'm past praying for?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to tell at this point if it's a root disease issue. No, it probably won't get better. But if it's a drought issue and you do increase the watering, is there any type of mulch material around it?
Yes.
What are you using?
Rice beans and cocoa hulls and...
I'm not a big fan of cocoa bean mulch. Not so much because it isn't necessarily a nice looking mulch, but I have some suspicions about certain types of disease causing organisms that you might bring in on that particular mulch.
Oh, really?
No, I'm not that concerned about this particular disease on a woody ornamental,
mm-hmm.
But certainly if you were using it around herbaceous plants, particularly hostas, there's a disease called southern blight. It's a fungal disease. And we've had several instances where people have recently spread cocoa bean mulch and then all of a sudden have an outbreak of this particular disease. And I'm pretty suspicious that we're bringing it in, the fungus in on this cocoa bean mulch. And it is kind of a warmer climate pathogen, so it tends to like warmer conditions. And so I think it may be kind of native with where the cocoa bean is produced. I think I agree with Laura in terms of wondering about some drought stress on that particular shrub. If I see marginal browning on leaves, I've oftentimes, one of the first things I ask folks about is whether or not they're watering on a regular basis. So I would recommend probably as a first step trying watering. Do you have a soaker hose at all that you can use?
No, but I can do it. I can take care of that.
Yeah, I usually recommend soaker hoses or drip hoses because you can place those around the drip line of the tree or shrub, and that gives you a nice uniform watering, relatively slow, so the water soaks into the ground rather than getting lost through evaporation.
Yeah, it doesn't waste a lot of water that way either.
No, that's a great way in terms of conservation as well.
Yep.
I will do that then.
One quick comment for our listeners. Cocoa bean mulch, if you don't know, is toxic to dogs. There have been dogs that have been poisoned from eating cocoa bean mulch. So I do want you all to be aware of that.
And I thank you very much for calling. You know, and it smells so good.
I know.
When it's wet. And
unfortunately, if you have straight cocoa bean mulch, I find that it tends to decay relatively quickly.
It does.
To me, it turns into kind of a slimy mess after
a
few weeks. And I've heard that adding the rice hulls to it will actually help it stick around for a while longer. But I prefer other nice-smelling mulches personally. I tend to go for red cedar mulch myself, which I think is a nice mulch. It smells good. For me, it tends to last quite a while.
It does last long. That's what we use.
Yeah. So that's what I tend to recommend to folks.
Thanks again, Kate. Appreciate your call. Laura Jowell, Associate Professor in UW Extension Horticulturist. Brian Huddleston, who is a plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison. Our guest today on Garden Talk. Jim Packard, our producer. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Talking woody ornamentals today with our two guests, Laura Jowell and Brian Huddleston, so we can talk about their care. We can talk about diseases. Well, pretty much anything. And woody ornamentals include all kinds of things. Pine, fir, trees, shrubs.
Pines,
brown covers, all kinds of things. So give us a call if you have a question in those areas. A lot of people have called back and just wondered about the name of that tree that we were talking about from Connecticut. A lot of people missed the name of that.
Sure. That was the white fringe, F-R-I-N-G-E, fringe tree. And the scientific name It's a long one. It's Chionanthus virginicus. Do you want me to spell it?
No, that's all right.
Okay.
You'd have to have your pen ready because it's a long one.
Yeah.
Chionathus virginicus.
Yes. But white fringe tree should get you.
White fringe tree will do it for you.
Yep.
I don't think there are any other ones out there that
no.
that are close in terms of the sort of the name. Somebody called and said, oh, they got one from Sandy Bottom Nursery in Heartland, Wisconsin. So
good.
They're available around the state, different places, at least at Sandy Bottom, and I'm probably at some other nurseries. Let's see here. Robin in Oshkosh has been waiting a while, so let's go to Robin. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I have a question about my Amur maple and one about my Cotoneaster, but the Amur maple is much worse.
Okay.
Okay.
We've had it for maybe 25 years, and it seems as though it's been gradually declining in that time. The leaves have gotten pale and chlorotic, and it's dying. You know, limbs are dying, and we've had to cut them off. I sprinkled a bunch of sulfur around. I did that for maybe 3 years in a row. And then in desperation, I bore a bunch of holes around the drip line of the tree and poured pelletized sulfur in there. And we've watered all of that in, and the tree continues to decline.
Yeah, my first thought on that when I hear Amur maple is there's a disease called verticillium wilt. It's a fungal disease. The fungus is in the soil. It infects through the root system, and it colonizes the water-conducting tissue inside the tree. And unfortunately, it blocks off water movement from the roots up to the upper parts of the plant, and you get this kind of sectional dieback of the tree where the branches will kind of die one at a time. Unfortunately, there's not much you can do for that particular disease other than what you've been doing, which is to prune out the dead branches as they occur. Make sure you're giving the tree plenty of water. Typically, it is eventually a lethal disease. And then you have to be very, very careful about what you replant in that particular area because the fungus has a very wide host range. And
well, tell me a couple of things we can replant.
Yeah, what I would suggest, conifers are a great replacement. So if you like conifers, go and get a nice conifer that you like, and that's a great sort of tree to put in there. If you want something that's deciduous, one of the things that I oftentimes recommend is amelanchier or serviceberry.
Oh, so just that would be great.
Just a beautiful spring flowering tree, one of my favorites, and it seems to be very, very tolerant of the... And Laura's pointing to her mouth about how tasty the little fruits are on
yes,
that tree.
We have one, and the birds get them first.
We get them always. First, yeah. Laura's commented on that before, too. You got to be very, very careful, or the birds do get them before you do. And let's see here. Other things that I really like, if for anyone else who's had a problem with verticillium, ginkgos are very resistant and, in fact, probably immune.
Ginkgo comes in a shrub?
No, but I have one that I got as a gift that's technically a tree, and they're very slow growing. So I'm not really convinced that the one I have is going to be a tree anytime during my lifetime, quite frankly. So, but I love ginkgos, and they're one of my favorite trees, and I recommend them a lot because they tend to be fairly disease resistant.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, my other question is, and I think you answered this already, I have cranberry Cotoneaster that keeps having ends die off and that, you know, turn brown and die off.
Now, that could be something different. It's probably not verticillium wilt with that particular host because Cotoneaster tends to be relatively resistant. What I tend to see in Cotoneasters is something called fire blight, which is a bacterial disease.
Ooh.
And it's actually been a fairly good year, from what I understand, from our fruit pathologist for fire blight. We've been seeing a lot of it, although the weather pattern hasn't been real classic to get the disease. Usually we associate a lot of fire blight with relatively wet weather, and it's been relatively dry. But certainly that could be the problem. And if that's the case, what I normally recommend is pruning. And I would prune down about 10, if you can, and this is oftentimes difficult in a small shrub like a Cotoneaster, but down 10 to 12 inches below where you see the dieback, because the bacterium can actually grow quite a ways down the stems, down the branches, and you won't see symptoms right away, but it's there. And if you prune up higher, then you don't get rid of all of the bacterium. The other thing that I sometimes see problems with on Cotoneaster are crown rots, and these are usually fungal diseases, and that will cause some branch dieback as well. And if you're interested in checking for sure to see what you have, you're welcome to send in a sample to my clinic for a small fee. We'll take a look at your sample and tell you what the problem is. And for details on how to submit a sample, you can go to my website, which is PDDC.
PEDC?
P-double-D. PDC, so that stands for Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic,
right.
.wisc.edu.
Okay.
And there's information on how to contact the clinic and also some directions on how to submit a sample.
Okay. And can you tell me what to do if it is crown rot?
If it's crown rot, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to do much at all. And the shrub will eventually decline, and then it's a matter of replacing it. And unfortunately, with a lot of woody ornamentals, when you get infections in the crown or even in the branches sometimes, the only option to get rid of these organisms is pruning. And if it's in the crown, that basically means what I call judicious pruning at the ground level, which is removal.
Yeah.
I wanted to add one quick thing. I've noticed some on the cotoneaster aster that we have in the garden, some problems with rabbit and vole injury as well, causing some of the dieback of the tips.
Yeah.
They get underneath and they chew on the bark and they girdle the end of a twig, for example. So look also for that. See if you see any chewing or biting marks on
We've had that in the past, so I knew to look for that.
Okay. Yeah, we see that a lot. I see that a lot on junipers in the spring.
Yes.
People will send in samples where the branches have died back, and you know I can't find anything in terms of disease. And when I talk to the folks, I'll say, look farther back towards the base of the shrub and see if you see any indication of chewing. And oftentimes they can find evidence.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. Thanks a lot for calling. Barb in Marshfield, you're next. Hi, Barbara. Are you there, Barbara?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, here I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I would like to start some new pine trees, and I'm wondering if I could just plant some cones and or take some nice green branches and stick them in water or in the ground.
No, unfortunately, you can't root pines from branches like that. Also, with cones, if you plant a cone, no, you're not going to get a new tree either. You need the seeds. And if the cone scales are already open, chances are that the seeds have probably already fallen and dropped to the ground. It's something generally that's quite easy to do. If you get seeds, you would need to sow them. And I can get into more information later if you want to call me, but it's generally not something that's real easy to do, especially at this time of year with drought.
Yeah. So the option is?
So the option is I'd probably just buy a little seedling and plant it, one that's already germinated, and plant it in your yard.
Okay.
Let's talk about pines we would not plant.
Yeah.
I probably would not plant an Austrian pine.
Or a
Scots pine. I love both of those trees, but unfortunately, they are very disease prone. So we tend to see a lot of a disease called Diplodia tip light, which is a fungal disease that will come in and start basically causing the limbs to die back from the tips back. So that's something that I tend to steer people away from.
What do you recommend?
Where are you in the state?
Yeah.
She's in Marshfield.
Marshfield.
Okay. You could plant white pine.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite trees, our native eastern white pine. If your soil is on more of the acidic or sandy side, white pine as well as red pine would do well.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Barb. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. And here's a little tip, too. Because there's a little delay on the recording and on our broadcast, a few seconds, it's probably best to stay online. Once you connect with us, keep listening via the telephone, because that's immediate. If you set the phone down and listen on the radio, there's about a 7-second delay. So that's just something to let you know. So once you get hooked in, stay listening on the phone. All right? Let's go to Kathy at Appleton next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hi. I have a well-established silver maple, and this year I have noticed that there's multiple tip dieback for probably anywhere from 6 to 12 inches on just numerous ends of the tree. And is this, you know, something with winter, or is it verticillium, as, you know, you had just talked about? It just seems like it's so many tips that have died back.
I'm not really convinced that it's probably verticillium on that particular type of maple, although maples in general are very susceptible to verticillium. Silver maples tend to be somewhat resistant. And you said you saw a lot of of branches that are dying back?
It's just at the very tips. As you stand back and look at the tree, you just see, you know, you see this mass of leaves, but then 6 to 8 inches of multiple ends with nothing on them. And that was just this spring.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah. Actually, Laura's was wondering about some sort of twig borer. There are certain types of fungi that will infect branches. We call them canker fungi. And they infect and then eventually girdle the branches, and that can cause some tip dieback. It certainly could be something like that. Have you had any cicadas in your area of the state? I don't think so.
Not yet. Too far north.
But certainly we've been in the southern part of the state, Walworth County, those sorts of areas, we've been seeing a lot of branch dieback due to the cicadas being out and doing some damage. I don't know what to tell you. Again, if you can get some of those branches and send them into the clinic, we could certainly take a look and see whether we find anything or not. Sometimes with these general branch diebacks, the sorts of things that, again, I tend to tell people to look for, you know, whether the tree's under a lot of drought stress. Although Laura was commenting that silver maples tend to be very, very tough. But any type of stress that's on the tree, any sort of root pruning, I suppose, from construction or anything of that sort would be some things to take a look at that might cause some general branch dieback on the tree.
Are these newly planted or are they established?
No, this is a very well-established tree, probably about 20 to 25 years old.
Another problem, unfortunately, is girdling roots.
Girdling roots, that was something I was thinking of, too.
And that would have to be diagnosed through pictures, looking at the base of the plant. Is there a root flare? Is the tree going into the ground like a telephone pole with no flare?
Nope, there is a root flare.
There is.
There is a root flare.
Okay.
Yes. So that's why it's just so puzzling to see so many tips that have, you know, no leaves on them.
Right.
Sure. Again, if you want to take some, if you've got a digital camera and would like to take some photos, you'd be welcome to send those to me as well. And there's no charge for me to take a look at digital photos. So if you want to go to my website, my email address is there, and then you can just go ahead and send those photos to me, and I'll take a look and see if I can figure anything out for you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I will do that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Kathy. Appreciate it.
It's so difficult sometimes trying to figure out what people are describing. And I get this mental picture in my mind of what they're describing, and they'll send me a photo, and it's something
totally different.
And, you know, all of a sudden it'll go click that you know what exactly it is. So pictures really do help oftentimes in terms of trying to figure out exactly what's going wrong.
Lou in Park Falls. We'll turn to you now. Hi, Lou.
Hey. Yeah, about 2 or 3 years ago, I planted 3 different varieties of apple tree, and they did okay. And then this year, we had a late frost right as the one tree bloomed. I guess it was an early bloomer. And the tree looks like it's half dead now, and I'm just wondering if that... It was right about the time, actually. It was just a couple days later that I noticed the tree deteriorating, and I was wondering if that tree's going to come back.
Hard to say. What do you think, Laura?
Well, I'm not an apple tree expert, but it sounds like there probably was some frost damage,
yeah, that
some
would
bud
be my
kill.
First thought.
And you said it happened right when the plant was flowering?
Yeah.
Yeah. It probably killed some of the emerging buds. Is the plant growing at all right now? Are you getting new growth?
The main part of the tree is not, just some of the branches on one side of it. I noticed the same thing happened to the oak tree. It all went brown, but then it almost like rebudded and came back. But I've been waiting for this one now, and it's been a few weeks, and I just wanted, not this year, maybe next year. I'd hate to have to replant it because all the trees were the same height, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you're probably in a wait mode.
Yeah, that I would probably wait until next year and see how it does. It could be, you know, just that it nailed it right at the time. When it was flowering and killed a lot of the emerging buds. Usually plants will recover from that the next year.
Good luck, Lou. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Jan and Eau Claire, your turn now. Hi, Jan.
Hello. I have a very large declining basswood tree with small leaves and branches with few leaves. And you talked about sectional dieback. I don't know if you would say that, but one half of the tree is sicklier than the other half. And somebody said that it might be a result of the 5-year drought.
Certainly.
And prescribed Cambistat. Now, I was wondering, is if we do use this, well, first of all, I'll ask your diagnosis.
Well, the first thing that comes into my mind is, okay, how old is this tree?
It is old. We've been here since about 66, and it was a good mature tree then.
Uh-huh. Well, lindens are notorious for developing girdling roots. Again, is there a visible root flare?
Yes.
At the base of the plant?
Yep.
Okay. Some girdling roots occur below the ground where you can't see them. That's one thing I would think right off the bat. If part of the tree is dying, it could be that it is some type of root problem.
Yeah, it could be verticillium, although typically it sounds like the tree is leafing out pretty much over the entire tree. You don't have any sections that have totally died back, is that correct?
No, there are sections that are very puny.
But you still have leaves on those particular branches?
There are some, but there is one branch I see that's totally gone.
Okay, it could be verticillium. I certainly have seen verticillium in a linden tree, but I like Laura, I'm wondering about girdling roots and certainly the drought. If you've had 5 years of drought, that probably isn't helping things either.
And then linden bore.
Linden bore was the other thing I was thinking of as well.
And what does linden bore look like? Could I see it? Or
you'll see the exit holes.
Yeah, look for holes in the trunks and larger branches.
The hole in trunks?
Yeah, you'll see little tiny holes. I don't know the. Do you know the size, Laura?
Not offhand. They're not real big, but they're not that small. You'll see them.
Okay.
They're
at least bigger than a period.
Yes.
Two questions. If we water it, is the soaker hose at drip line the best way to water?
Soaker hoses are wonderful, but the drip line is not where the roots end. The roots often grow 3 to 5 times the height of a tree, so they're often well past the drip line.
So actually you should be watering the entire lawn around it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, most people don't have the wherewithal to do that much watering, so I tend to say to concentrate at the drip line. But yeah, the more you can water, the better.
And then if we have another linden tree that is not affected at all on the boulevard that's quite close, and I would think if drought had been the cause, that also would be affected.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it as big a tree as the one in your yard?
The one that is affected is larger.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I'm starting to lean more towards girdling roots, especially since it's on one side of the tree.
Okay.
But again, I would have a certified arborist.
Take
and I emphasize the word certified.
Certified arborist.
Yeah, one that is certified by the International Society of Arboriculture. They've passed a certification exam.
Okay.
And let me give you a web address where you can look up
Please.
A certified arborist. It's www.waa-isa.
IF as in
no,
farm?
No, S as in Sam.
Oh, ISA.
.org.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura Jowell, Associate Professor in UW Extension Horticulturist. Brian Huddleston, Plant Disease, Dr. Death, as he's sometimes called.
That's
no,
my affectionate
yeah,
name.
And I'm Dr. Laura, so we got the Dr. Laura, Dr. Death show.
Both of them with the UW Madison. Glad to have them here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking woody ornamentals today with our two guests, Laura Jowell and Brian Huddleston. Glad to have them along and certainly happy to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question. And matter of fact, Susan in Oconomowoc has one, so let's go there. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I need some suggestions for planting shrubs along the west side of our house, which gets a lot of heat. The last we tried were wigelias, and they didn't make it. Do you have any suggestions for me?
Are you looking for evergreen or deciduous?
Deciduous.
One shrub that I actually have, it's more like a herbaceous perennial, but it's kind of a sub-shrub because it is woody, is Russian sage. Russian sage or Perovskia.
Okay.
That's very heat tolerant. It tolerates the hottest, driest part of your yard quite well and doesn't seem to wilt or unless it's newly planted. Of course, you got to water it until it's established.
Mm-hmm.
Some other things I was thinking of for a very hot, dry area. This isn't flowering, it's evergreen, but junipers do very well if you wanted to have some evergreen look to it.
Okay.
Some other things, is it possible to get any irrigation over to that area?
Yes, it is.
Okay, because I have in a very hot, dry area, I have some nearly wild roses, and they do very well as long as you water them. But they've done you know, remarkably well in a hot, dry area or a hot area as long as it's watered.
Okay.
Some other plants that I think do well in hot, dry areas, and I'm kind of drawing a blank here, which I shouldn't, but I am. I'm human. Our Genista, I'm trying to think of the common name. It's also known as Dyer's Greenwood. Genista is G-E-N-I-S-T-A.
Okay.
I have seen it available at garden centers, and that one's a very tough, hot, dry area plant, and should do, and it has yellow flowers in summer.
Okay.
All right.
That's wonderful. We need to give something like that a try, and I appreciate your help.
Yep. Give it a try, Susan. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura, we haven't talked too much about lilacs yet, but you've got a new publication out on lilac.
Yes, it's called Lilacs for the North, and it's a UW Extension publication. It is available for purchase on, I don't remember the exact one, I think it's www.learningstore.
You better check this, Larry, if you've got your computer up. It's www.learningstore.uwex.edu, I believe, or maybe just learningstore.uwex.edu.
Actually, if you go to a search engine and type in University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store, or even Learning Store UW Extension, you'll be able
to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll pop up.
And it's a full-color brochure that lists all the commercially available cultivars of not just common lilac, but many other different species of lilac. It also breaks them down into early flowering, mid-season, and late flowering lilacs, so you can plant different species of lilacs and have them in flower for several months.
And let's take some more calls here. Phyllis, I believe, is next. Phyllis in Dubuque, Iowa. You are next. Hi, Phyllis.
Good morning. I have two plants that are in trouble. One is an arborvita identified as Thuja shermani, and the other is a hardy hibiscus. And the lady who did my landscaping has it identified only as tropical double pink. They've both been in the ground 5 years. I don't know about the arborvita. That has all of a sudden, I looked this morning, and it's loaded with, I suppose, they're berries, but they're green.
Cones.
Is that an unusual thing?
Yeah. The cones are first on arborvitae or thuja are green, and then they eventually turn brown and woody, and they open up.
Okay, and it's so heavy on one, it's laying it away from the main, you know, shrub. And I wondered, you know, if I should cut those off.
Nope.
Just let them on. Let it drag.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the hibiscus. All of a sudden, I never had any trouble till this year. And they've been in 5 years. Gradually, one by one, the outer branches, first the leaves wilt, and then they brown out. And I've been cutting them off at the base. I still have, you know, quite a bit of the plant left, but I just don't know what to think about that.
Yeah, the main disease problem that I've seen on the perennial hibiscus plants, shrubs, have been canker diseases, localized infections on branches. But you said it continues to lose entire canes?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I just cut it off then because the leaves all browned out.
Yeah. Then I'm starting to be concerned about verticillium again. I've never seen it on that particular host, but that's a very typical pattern for that particular disease. There are some other types of what are called vascular wilts that are very similar to verticillium, but that would be the one I would be concerned about. And if it is that particular disease, eventually the entire shrub
will die. Okay.
Yeah, and I feel your pain with that particular disease because I have a red bud in my backyard that's slowly dying from verticillium, and it's kind of like your shrub, about a branch a year dies off, and it's very sad.
Quite a few branches, but it was a big plant. After 5 years, it was really big.
Yeah, about the
only thing... there's nothing to do other than just cut it the back, them back.
Yeah, what I would make sure that you do with those pruning tools, and I should have probably mentioned this earlier, is make sure that between cuts, and certainly before you move on to pruning other shrubs or trees in your yard, you disinfest those tools. And what we normally recommend is dipping them in either something like 10% bleach or 70% alcohol.
Okay, so you're just rubbing alcohol.
Rubbing alcohol is 70% alcohol. You could use that. You can
just
also
wipe them off.
Or else put a little bit of the alcohol in a can or a jar and just dip them.
Sure.
Or the other thing that you can do is, if you don't like having open alcohol, is to get some of the spray disinfectants like Lysol. And oftentimes they're about 70% alcohol by volume, and so you can use those. Just spray them right on the tools.
Okay.
All right. And Laura, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, the lady a couple calls ago that wanted some hot, dry plants.
I just thought of them, Laura.
My brain hasn't kicked in this morning yet. I'm sorry. But I thought of, for hot, dry areas, any of the sumacs do very well in hot, dry areas. There's a new one called Tiger Eyes that has yellow foliage throughout the growing season. It's quite beautiful. Another plant is our native gray dogwood. Gray dogwood's a very tough, drought-tolerant plant, can tolerate wet soils or dry soils. And then finally, our native St. John's wort has yellow flowers in summer, and that one's is a very tough plant, too.
All right. And back to Phyllis. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And Kathleen in West Allis, your turn now. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I really need your advice. I'm going nuts trying to determine what would be a good choice of evergreen for the north side of my house. I would like something small, kind of pyramid shape, that would kind of lend to the cottage effect for my Tudor home. The trouble is, I don't have a lot of sun. I've got a maple and an elm that kind of shade the area. So when you look at the nursery stores, they have these little tags and it says sun to shade. And it's confusing because I'm not sure if I'm going to put something there that's going to die off because of the lack of sun.
Okay, when you north side of a house, is it getting any direct sunlight at all?
On the west side, yes. On the east side, it's extremely filtered.
Yeah, for deep shade, there are three evergreens that you can use for shade.
Okay.
There's hemlock.
Mm-hmm.
And our native hemlock, it's a tree, but there's a lot of dwarf cultivars of it. So some are shrubs. Those would do okay in shade.
Mm-hmm.
Yews or taxus, those tolerate shade quite well. And there's a lot of different cultivars out there.
Okay.
And they're shrubs. And then boxwood. Boxwood would tolerate the shade as well. And there are the green series. There's green gem, green mound, green velvet, green mountain. Those are winter hardy. Where are you located again?
In West Allis, which is
West Allis. Yeah, they're perfectly hardy for you. Either one of those. If you have a deer problem, I would not use yews. Yews is like a salad bar for a deer.
No.
They'll line up for miles to chew on your plant.
Oh, no.
I would use boxwood then if you have a deer problem.
Right. So like the junipers. And
junipers need full sun.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, even the cypress, they need full sun.
Which cypress, like, are you referring to?
Well, I'm not sure which one it is, but I saw a couple of varieties that were relatively small that I love the green color of.
Okay.
But
you could, there's another one that can tolerate partial shade, and it's called Russian cypress or Russian arborvitae, and it's microbiota. That one can tolerate partial shade. They do have to have some little bit of sun or else they get kind of sparse.
Okay.
But that one needs very good drainage. I don't know what your soil is like.
Oh, it's good.
It's good soil.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Especially with the hemlock. Hemlocks need moisture. They're not tolerant to drought at all.
Right, right. And I have a real other question here, a secondary question. What should I do with the four bags of cocoa bean shells that I have in my yard?
Oh, no.
I don't know what possessed me. I bought them last year and never got around to doing anything about them, so I'm reluctant now to spread it out.
Well, I have mixed feelings about the use of it. It is organic matter, but I have two dogs, and when I moved into the house, I noticed, I bought a house last year, I noticed that there was cocoa bean mulch down, and my one dog in particular likes to eat just about everything, including toads. So I dug it under to hide it from him. Otherwise, there has been dogs that have been poisoned from cocoa bean mulch.
Yeah.
If you're really concerned, I think what I would do would be to, if you have a local area where you can take organic yard waste, I would simply take it there and have them compost it.
Yeah, yep. I think that's a good suggestion.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Actually, I have a question for Laura about the boxwoods that you were recommending. Do those have problems with winter kill at all?
No, they shouldn't.
Okay.
As long as they're well watered,
okay.
They shouldn't. The green series is from Sheridan Nursery up in Canada, and they were bred for specifically for cold hardiness.
Okay.
They're hybrid boxwoods, and they don't turn brown in winter, unlike the old ones that used to turn that ugly brown mm-hmm. color. These stay green.
Okay.
And they're
the
quite
reason
nice.
I was asking, I had some boxwoods that came into the clinic that had pretty severe dieback over mm-hmm. the winter, and I think there was probably some salt.
It could
injury,
be, oh,
injury.
Yeah, they're sensitive to salt.
But they also had a fungal disease that had come in, Volutella, that had come in afterwards and was causing some problems as well. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen, thank you very much for calling. Brian Huddleston and Laura Jell are guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and today we're talking woody ornamentals, all kinds of things with our two guests, Laura Jell, who's a UW Extension horticulturist, and Brian Huddleston, who is also a plant diagnostician, works out of the Plant Disease Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and having some fun now talking with them about all the different diseases. We can talk about cultural practices relating to all kinds of ornamentals, and we're talking shrubs and evergreens, trees, vines, woody ornamentals, those sorts of things. So if you would like to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Lots to talk about. I know we've got St. John's wort bushes. We've got aeration around trees. Those questions and more. Stay with us. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Laura Jell, associate professor and UW Extension horticulturist, and Brian Huddleston, plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Really happy to have them with us, and please feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 as we talk woody ornamentals. Let's go to Jean and Racine. Jean, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. I have to say I love your program. That's the first time I got to listen to something I enjoyed while sitting on hold. I just have a question. I've got two little St. John's wort bushes that I bought, and they're perfectly shaped, nice and round, but they're getting really big, and they're starting to block out sun from other things I have planted around them, and I'm afraid if I prune them back, I'm going to kill them. I don't know. Can I prune them?
Can Jean whack those things off or not?
I wouldn't whack. You could clip them back a little bit. Take it back to a lateral bud or to a lateral branch. Don't leave any stubs. If it's, you know, St. John's wort, if it's our native Hypericum calmianum, the calm St. John's wort, that's going to get 3 feet in height and width as well, or if not more. So you might want to move it to a location where it'll have enough room for it to grow.
They're pretty much dead already. What happened is I had bought one first, and it was kind of in partial shade, and it really didn't grow at all, but mm-hmm. I just love the yellow flowers. They're just like my favorite flower in my garden. So I bought two more, and they're out in the sun, and they just...
Oh yeah,
they've got to be 3x3 already.
Yeah,
but they won't. Shouldn't maybe get much bigger than that?
Well,
yeah.
Not supposed to, but plants don't read books.
Doggone. Okay, so I mean, so I could take off 6 inches or so.
Yeah, you could. Just realize that you're going to be cutting off some of the flower buds because they're in bloom right now.
Yeah, well, they're just starting. Well, I wouldn't do it now. Anyway, I would probably do it in fall.
Yeah, you could do it since they set their flower buds on new tissue. You can do it. I probably would wait until spring, early spring, late winter, early spring.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep. Sure. Thanks, Jean. Thanks for calling. And Mary in Belleville, your turn now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks. I have two questions for Brian. The first, is a Kentucky coffee tree susceptible to verticillium wilt?
Actually, technically, yes. Laura's shaking her head no, but it's actually listed in one of my references. I had this discussion with a client the other day, and he had found a reference, and there's a book called Diseases of Trees and Shrub, which is kind of my Bible for tree diseases, and it is listed as susceptible there. I don't think it's particularly susceptible, but we actually have a sample in the clinic right now that we're testing
really?
For verticillium wilt. So I would be really surprised if you had serious problems with verticillium wilt, but it's not impossible.
I have serious dieback, two major limbs this year, and okay. one 2 years ago, so I was curious.
Yeah, it could possibly be that.
Okay, the second question is, last year we lost our entire crop of Harrelson apples because they had a fungus, apparently some kind of thing that gave it a gray rash all around, and then the little apples would burst open with huge cracks before they even got ripe. So this year we pruned away a lot of material so there'd be more sunlight. We also took down a building that was sheltering it from the south side, and we've been spraying it very carefully. I still have some of that happening. There's this webby sort of look gray stuff on the apples already, and I saw another cracked one.
Actually, on the apple fruits? Or
yes, on the fruit.
Okay. Do you see any sort of symptoms on the leaves at all?
No. Mm. Looks great. Just the fruit sort of gets, you know, grayish color. It's not fuzzy or anything. It's just discolored. And then it cracks open. And
yeah, I'm trying to think, because normally cracking is not something I normally associate with a disease-causing organism like a fungus.
Oh, really?
or one of the bacterial pathogens, at least not on apples. Oftentimes we have, there are water issues that will cause the fruits to split like that. So I'm not convinced that that's an actual disease problem. There might be some fertility issues as well. So one of the things you might want to consider, and I'm really guessing here, quite frankly,
yeah.
One of the things you might want to consider would be to test the trees for nutrients. So I would recommend a soil and a leaf tissue sample. And unfortunately, I can't remember the exact time of the year when it's best to do that. I believe it's in the spring sometime, but I don't know for sure. Where are you located?
Belleville.
Belleville.
We're southwest of Madison.
Okay.
And it's near other fruit trees, and it's in an area where we do have small fertilizing every year. So
okay.
I don't think it's lack of nutrients, and I know it's not water.
Okay.
So now it's really curious. It looked like a disease.
The only thing I could recommend at this point, since I'm kind of stumped here, would be if you're interested, try to get a sample into my clinic for us to look at.
I think I'll do that.
And then we'll see whether we can figure it out for you.
Okay.
Doesn't ring
Thank
a bell.
You.
You know, the sorts of things that I think about on apples are apple scab, which will cause a lot of leaf loss, and you can get actual infections on the fruits that will cause problems. We do see fire blight on apples, but that would cause branch dieback. There are some relatively minor fungal diseases on apple fruits. There's a fly speck that will cause little tiny black spots, very, very pinpoint size on the fruits, but nothing the way that she's describing. So I think I need to see some of the fruits.
All right. Thanks, Mary. Nina and Madison, your turn. Hi, Nina.
Hi. I just had a comment on the cocoa bean mulch.
Mm-hmm.
I was so interested to hear that because about 10 years ago, I mulched all my side gardens with that, and it made me sick.
Oh.
Every time I would go out anywhere near the garden, my throat would kind of close up, and just almost like when you walk in after something's been varnished.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allergic to chocolate?
And I had no idea that there was problems with it. I never used it again, but I was so interested to hear that it made dogs sick.
Yeah, are you allergic to chocolate by any chance?
No.
Okay. I'm wondering
I'm not really allergic to anything, but have you ever heard of people being sick from it, though?
No.
No, this is the first time. I'm wondering if there was something growing on it that was... lots of times fungi will grow on mulches, and then they'll produce lots and lots of spores, and that can cause some allergic reactions.
Sure.
It happened right away. I mean, I thought I bought it because it smelled so good,
mm-hmm.
I thought, and then it made me ill, so I never used it again.
Yeah.
Anyway, my other question was about a month ago at the farmer's market, I bought these wonderful French lavender that are grown up like topiaries. Like they're like a tree base.
Mm-hmm.
And the person also did it with rosemary. And I was wondering if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
and how you do it, and if there's other plants or herbs that would do that.
It's just trimming it into different geometric shapes. You do it when they're small. Rosemary is not hardy here, so it will winter kill.
She said I could take it in the house.
Yes, you can take it in the house. I was just about to say that.
Okay.
And lavender, too, it's really iffy on winter hardiness here. In fact, most people I talk to say they can't overwinter their lavender outdoors either.
This one's about 4 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been taking it into the winter. I mean, it looks just like a little tree base. Do any of the other herbs, can they do that also?
I imagine you could with some other herbs, but the reason why lavender and rosemary work so well is they're woody.
Okay, the other ones are not woody.
I'm thinking of like oregano or thyme.
Yeah, those are herbaceous.
Well, thyme's kind of...
Oh, thyme, yeah.
Yeah, it's
thyme
kind of woody. But, you know, I have seen other plants that they've done that too. It's a novelty.
It takes a long time.
It does, and it's a lot of pruning.
Yeah, I just thought it'd be fun to have those fresh herbs in the winter in the house.
Oh, sure,
also.
And they smell wonderful, but they do need a full sun window. And even then, they'll probably get kind of leggy and sparse.
And also make sure, particularly with the, it was rosemary you said you had?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, make sure that gets a lot of good circulation, because one of the things we tend to see on rosemary indoors are powdery mildews.
Okay.
And that's a fungal disease that'll cause the surface of the leaves to turn white and very powdery.
Okay. Okay, so it needs a lot of circulation.
Yeah, a lot of good air circulation to keep the humidity down around the plant.
Okay, and one other quick question. Is there things, ornamental, shrubs, anything that I could just throw into a back wooded area, you know, plant seeds or that will grow in sandy soil under lots of pine trees?
Sandy soil under lots of pine trees.
Yeah.
Boy. Well, when you say throw back there, I imagine you're gonna plant it.
I just want to put some color and some life back in there. Besides, you know, it's kind of, we've dug it out a little and put a fire pit back there, and I thought it would be kind of neat to have some more things growing besides just the pine trees.
Yeah, where are you located again?
I'm actually up in Abrams.
I'm not sure
what county are you.
15 minutes out of Green Bay.
Oh, okay. A plant that you may actually see growing in the woods up there is leatherwood or Dirca palustris.
Okay.
That plant actually likes well-drained soil, not too sandy. It does need some moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And it has yellow fall, very nice yellow fall color.
Okay. What's it called again?
Leatherwood.
Leatherwood?
Mm-hmm.
And are the ants going to be a problem? There's so many little ant hills all over in that woods. Will they be a problem? Is that something I need to treat? No?
No, I don't think so. Another plant I just thought of is, it's called sweet fern.
Fern.
Yeah, it's not a fern. It's actually a woody plant, but it's called sweet fern because it looks like a fern.
Okay.
And the scientific name is Comptonia.
Okay.
And the reason why it's called sweet is because it's not a sweet fragrance, but it has a very nice smell when you rub the leaves.
Oh, okay. And these would just be from a garden store?
Garden center, yeah. Yeah, those two.
Spring, fall, or when could I plant them?
You can plant them in the fall or in spring. If you plant them now, you just got to really water them a lot.
Okay.
Those two might be a little harder to find in garden centers. They are both native plants, though.
Okay, maybe online someplace?
Could be.
Okay. All right, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Barb in Rhinelander, you're next. Hi, Barbara.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about aerating around a very large established maple tree that I have in front of my house, and it's been here for a very long time. I had someone come and take a look at it last year, and he was concerned about some of the leaves on lower branches were yellowing sooner than others, and we talked about that a bit. And actually, his conclusion was that it needs to get more water probably. And so I've been trying different ways of aerating, and I don't know what to do, frankly. I have some kind of a long-timed, I know it's not called a pitchfork, but, you know, I'm sticking that into the ground just myself. And then I bought recently an aerator. Again, it's a hand foot tool that I just, you know, shove into the ground, and it takes plugs of dirt out, which I like the idea of doing that, but then the dirt gets stuck in there and I have a heck of a time trying to get it out. So my big question is about aerating. What can I do to aerate that area? And then I want to piggyback on to that after you're done answering that question, if I may, and ask about something I can then plant under the tree.
Okay. Regarding aerating, I'm always a little leery. Don't whatever you do, do not use a rototiller or anything like that, because you're going to be tearing up small feeder roots on the tree. You don't want to be doing that. There's a type of aeration called vertical mulching, where you go around the perimeter of the tree in a kind of a grid pattern, where you're digging 6-inch deep holes and putting in loose material to add some oxygen into the root zone. My question is, why are you doing this? Is your tree, you've mentioned that some of the leaves are turning yellow earlier than the others, but how is the general tree health? Is it in decline?
No. Well, I don't know. He said it probably is, but he said it's got, it could have years of life still in it. It's very old. I mean, that was his comment. So
okay.
I don't know the exact answer.
What kind of tree is this?
It's a maple.
Do you know what
it's
kind?
Beautiful. No, I don't. But it has the prettiest foliage in the fall on the whole block. But it's a big tree. I'm from California, so this is a very new area to me. I just don't know what it is.
And you're in the northern part of the state?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Rhinelander. Okay. It could be. Is it red fall color?
Yes.
Okay. It could be a red maple.
Okay.
And red maple does have outstanding fall color. Is this a tree that is native, or was it planted by somebody?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Do you notice a good root flare at the base of the tree?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. My question is, you know, I don't know how old this tree is, if it's a couple, 100 years old, or if it's 30 years old, I don't know. But
probably closer to 100.
Okay, it's getting up there in age. Mm-hmm. I'm a little leery of doing a lot of digging around the root system on older trees. You sometimes can send them into a downward spiral. Mm-hmm. Again, if you're concerned, I would call a certified arborist, International Society of Arboriculture certified arborist. And again, you can find those on the website.
That's www.waaisa.org.
Okay, good. And just a quick question about when you were mentioning the vertical mulching, and you said you can dig little holes. What diameter are you talking about?
Oh, just a couple, a couple inch diameter. Again, I would not do that necessarily, because again,
not for that tree.
Not for that old tree. Again, I would have a certified arborist come in and look at it and make that determination. Because again, if you mess around with the root system too much on mature trees, you can do more harm than good.
Okay, well then I will definitely do that. I appreciate it. Maybe you cannot answer this next question though. I was wondering what I could plant around the tree. I'm not a lawn person.
Yes, I'll tell you, the best thing you could do for your tree is get rid of the turf grass growing underneath it and put in mulch, because turf roots are very competitive with tree roots for water and nutrient uptake. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying you have to do the entire front yard, but especially the area around the trunk of the tree and a good 6 to 10 feet away from the trunk of the tree. Put in mulch. Make sure the mulch is not touching the trunk of the tree. Mm-hmm. No mulch volcanoes. You should only use 3 inches, no more, and keep it at least 4 inches away from the trunk and branches of the tree.
Now, especially with a maple, you don't want a thick mulch layer, because those roots are pretty close to the top of the...
Yeah, and they need oxygen, so...
They are, yeah. And so your suggestion was red mulch, did I hear earlier?
Pine bark, cedar mulch, something that's loose, not too compact, not too fine of material, something that is coarse that adds some oxygen.
Okay. And quick, I know the competition of the grasses around it is not good. What about something, low-growing ground cover, like... What about mosses?
Mosses are hard to grow. They need a lot of moisture and shade. If you wanted, again, if you really wanted a ground cover underneath, and some people would balk at me recommending periwinkle or vinca because it is invasive. However, if it's growing right underneath a tree, it's not going to become invasive unless you have a wooded lot and it's growing right into the wooded lot. It's not going to jump. It is not spread by seed. It is only spread by the runners. Periwinkle is something you can use. Sweet woodruff is another very nice fragrant ground cover you can use. There's many other different types of ground covers. There's ladies' mantle. There's other things you can use. My personal preference is using good old mulch. And if you want some color underneath it, you can plant a hosta here and there and some other shade perennials. But generally, mulch is what I prefer.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're competing with the tree.
Yep. Again.
Thanks, Barb. Thank you very much for calling. John in Sugar Camp, your turn. Hi, John.
Yes. You may have already answered this question. I got on the program late. I've got 5 blue spruce that were planted 25 years ago, and they're really starting to die at the ends of the needles have been turning brown, and a number of the branches from the trunk working up are starting to die off in that. And I've been pruning some of them, and there is some fresh growth this year, but I'm wondering, is there any way to save them and how I go about doing that?
Yeah, the trees are not likely to die from any of the common things that would be causing the sorts of symptoms that you're talking about. But blue spruce is just not a tree that I recommend because it's so disease prone. It's not well adapted to our environment here in the state. It's a little bit too wet in terms of it being muggy and humid and a lot of moisture in the air during the summertime. And there are a couple of diseases that can be a problem with the needle loss that you're seeing kind of from the inside out. There's a fungal disease called Rhizosphera needle cast it's a fungal pathogen that infects the needles and then eventually causes the needles to fall off. If you're starting to see a lot of branches that are totally dead, there's another more serious fungal pathogen called Cytospora. Actually, Leucocytospora is the technical name, but the disease is called Cytospora canker, and that fungus girdles branches and causes them to entirely die. There are also some other types of fungi that will cause branch dieback as well. If you're interested, we do have some fact sheets on several of these diseases, and they are available at our UW Extension Horticulture website, and they're free to download, and that web address is wihort.uwex.edu and look for Rhizosphera, which is begins R-H-I-Z-O, and then Cytospora, C-Y-S-T. That should get you far enough in the alphabetical listings to find those fact sheets.
Okay, would I be better off than to remove these trees?
Not necessarily, but what you're going to have to do probably to make them look a little better is prune off the branches the way you've been doing, and unfortunately you end up what we call a lollipop tree, which is not the most aesthetically pleasing. But certainly these diseases typically will not kill the tree. The Cytospora could potentially if the fungus gets into the main trunk, but usually if you're pruning judiciously, you can get the infected branches out of the tree before the fungus gets to the trunk.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And LaVon in St. Croix County, your turn. Hi, LaVon.
Hi. I have some help for the lady that you recommended leatherwood for.
Mm-hmm.
It's available at the Eastern Plant Specialties, and the phone number is 732-382-2508.
732-382-2508?
Yes.
And what was the name of the place again?
It's Eastern Plant Specialties. I've ordered from them every year, and they have all kinds of unusual things, and their stock is just excellent.
Are they in East Coast?
It's in New Jersey, and that's, I think, where you order from, but I think their things are grown in Maine.
Mm-hmm. I would also do check with local nurseries in Wisconsin, too.
Yeah.
I forgot where that woman was from, but... I would advise her to check locally first.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, boy, the time flew by here, didn't it?
Yeah, it
does. Indeed.
We'll have to have you guys back faster than it was 12 months ago, I think, was the last time we had you on.
The Dr. Laura and Dr. Death show.
Dr. Laura and Dr. Death. Laura Jowell is an associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals with the UW-Madison Horticulture Department, Brian Huddleston, plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And they'll be back again. And we've got to get them on yet this summer, at least another time here. And we can, plenty of calls. There was no problem there. By the way, somebody called in and said an herb that can be trained as a topiary is bay leaf.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have seen that at the farmer's market. It's quite pretty.
Quite pretty. All right. So that's one final last word and last tip for you here. Really appreciate having them along, and thank you very much for listening. Just to let you know, we've got another show coming up on Monday, and Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison will be along. He's our computer guy, a computer specialist. I got a couple of computer problems, too, I want to ask him about. Anyway, you'll be able to ask your questions, too. That'll be Monday. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.